Think Realty Nation, it's Avi Golhar. Welcome to the Think Realty Podcast. I'm really excited to be here today. We have an awesome podcast all lined up and squared away for you. One of my really good friends, Rick Malero, from his Capital Group, will be joining us in a little bit. He'll be talking about where the market cycle is today, where we are in the real estate world. And he and I share very similar thoughts when it comes to investing, and we're excited to share these thoughts with you and hopefully instill in you that you should be investing in real estate if you are not yet. Now, let's do a market update. I'll have that up for you in just a second. And then, of course, later, after we finish up with Rick, I'm going to go on a quick little rant about what you could be doing as a real estate investor and what you need to be doing right now, given the conversation with Rick, and to sum all of that up. And then, if you're a millennial, what type of home features you have been looking for. And this is really important for those house flippers out there that are interested in selling to millennials. So all that coming up on the Think Realty podcast today. It's going to be a good one. This podcast is brought to you by Renters Warehouse, one of the largest, fastest growing, and highest reviewed property management companies in America. You want to check them out? Go to renterswarehouse.com. Good friends Kevin Ortner, Greg Rand, and Noel Christopher. Huge shout out to you guys over there. All right, so market update. Cash sales share decrease annually. Kind of interesting. I don't know how to kind of take this. I'll probably ask my buddy Rick here in just a second. But here's the update. All cash sales represented a 28% of all single family and condo sales in quarter one of 2019, which is up 0.3 of a point from 27.7% of all sales in the previous quarter, but down from 28.9% of all sales in the first quarter of 2018. Now, all the pundits, you know what they're going to do? They're going to say, oh, it's down 0.9% from the first quarter of 2019. So the housing market must be crashing. That's not happening. It's just a cycle. It's called a cycle. It goes up and it goes down. It goes up and it goes down. Not like that, but more like a sine and cosine wave. You know the stuff that you learned in geometry? Sine, cosine, not the tangent. It doesn't work like that. So my overall thoughts are it all comes down to where you are locally in your market. If you're not paying attention, you're not driving the area, and you don't know what's going on super hyper local, then you don't really have any business investing in real estate. So cash sales, yeah, I mean, I think it's important to track some of these things, but you can find exactly what's happening by connecting with a local real estate agent, by a local realtor in your area. Wholesalers, builders, developers, I can go on. You have all these other amazing people. All right, that being said, I'm excited to have this conversation and have Rick weigh in on this information in just a second. And a little bit about Rick. I've known him for quite a while. He's with His Capital Group based out of Orlando, Florida. You can check him out. Go to hiscapitalgroup.com. I've known him for a little bit. He is a smart real estate investor. He knows how to lend capital as well. And if there's one person that I go to understand where we are nationally, it will be Rick. Rick, welcome to the show, man. I'm excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here with you, brother.
See, you got the pocket square going on. I wish I had my pocket square today. Nobody told me it was pocket square Think Realty video podcast day. Like, that's not fair.
Hey, at least one of us, right?
At least one of us. Give us a little background on who you are and what you do, man.
Yeah, so I'm a real estate investor. I started, like many people, I started acquiring real estate assets in the residential space. And over time, I had a really interesting encounter that challenged me at my core with what I was doing as an investor. And I realized that I was very exposed. And so what I ultimately did is I started diversifying. And over time, we invested in commercial, other residential strategies, new construction, and ultimately lending in 2013. And so we do a little bit of everything. This year, we're targeted about $40 million in capital that we'll be placing in the real estate market as far as private capital is concerned. And we're just really excited about what's going on. In fact, I'm really happy with where we are in the market, actually, as you were chiming in talking about that.
So you do a lot of analysis on a regular basis. You have an economist on your team that you get regular updates from. You have a quarterly economic report that you put out. What's the gut feel? I mean, if you and I were to go head to head, I mean, I have to kind of like take your expertise on this because you have the crystal ball. You're over here and I've got the snow globe and I like try to shake my snow globe and try to figure out what the heck's going on. But then I just call you and you'll send me a text message with exactly what I need to know. So in terms of the real estate cycle, where are we?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty evident. Like you said before, real estate is a very local market, especially yeah. When you're talking about residential real estate, you know. And the reality, though, is for the most part, as a national average, it really appears that we are still in the growth stage of the real estate cycle.
Okay.
I don't suspect that we'll be at the saturation stage of the market cycle for probably, I would say, a year or two, just based on trends. We're definitely seeing a slowdown, but a lot of times people also forget that the new inventory in the market, meaning the new construction, is beginning to obviously make an impact on the inventory numbers. And there is a slowdown to that, but ultimately we are not building and overbuilding. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
So back in 2006, the market was obviously booming. It was growing. We were in a growth cycle, pretty much like where we're at right now.
Yeah.
The difference then and what started getting us there is that in 2006, for the national need all across America, we needed about 1 million homes based on the growth patterns, migration patterns, and just based on to keep up. However, we built over 2 million homes. So obviously there was a substantial surplus already in 2006 of homes that we really didn't need because there was a lot more speculation. Financing was very aggressive. So when you look at this current market cycle, yes, we're in a growth stage. And obviously everybody will know that where you look at the market where you're at. However, based on the population growth and based on the needs in across America, I think we're close to 900,000 homes, if I recall correctly from our economist report.
Okay.
And the reality
is the need still the 1 million homes a year?
I think last I checked, it's about 900. If I'm wrong, I have to check with him, with the economist exactly.
Yeah.
But let's just put it this way. We're not overbuilding based on the population growth right now.
Okay.
Financing is not nearly as flexible as it used to be. Now, you and I had the whole conversation before as well, that it's slowly creeping in. We're starting to find those old ninja loans coming back. But they're still got a seatbelt on.
Yeah, so again, I think I called you the other day and I'm like, all right, I think the Mortgage 360 guys, they're hawking the 100% financing. I think that was for real estate investors. And I'm like, all right, really? So then you dig into that a little bit and you want to make sure you're really heavily focused on the asset. I think FHA at some point, they were talking about loaning out to investors that had credit scores in the 400s. And I thought that was appalling. So I'm like, what? So you are seeing that. That's just not me reading too much into programs and into lending programs. You're also seeing that as well, where we see a lot of the 0% down?
That's correct. Okay. You're starting to see it, right? So it's beginning. So look at it from the perspective of we're starting to see the little cracks in the foundation. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen, but we know that at some point in the future, it is inevitable. And I can tell you that with certainty because when you look back in history, you see how we repeat the same mistakes every single time. I mean, the first one was 1819, 1837, 1857, 1893. And I can go on and on, but I want to see that there's trends, right? And so when you take a look at that and you look at our current economy, we are growing. Yes, there's a lot of opportunity. And we're starting to slowly see those little indicators that tell us, hey, at some point, this thing is going to go to that next level. So as an investor, what we're doing, and I think that's more important than where we are in the market, is we are thinking 2 to 3 years ahead. Our office is discussing what are the tactics that we need to start implementing today that will actually come to fruition in the next 2 years so that we're positioned so that if the market goes down, we're ready. And even if it doesn't, we're ready. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. So what are you doing about the future in terms of we know that we're headed – kind of like this, we'll probably do one of these things and whatever, right? So it's the wave. I can't believe I just did that. I don't know why I did that. Next 2 or 3 years, we're expecting a correction. What should I be doing? That's the question, not when. What should I be doing?
Right. So, you know, I'm going to truly steal this from the Bible. There's a gentleman by the name of Joseph there. And during the growth cycle, what he actually did is he took out of his resources, and he was very smart because what he started doing is instead of wasting his money, instead of spending the resources that they had, what he actually did is he started storing aside a percentage of the revenue and the proceeds and the harvest that they were getting. And so what I would encourage people to do right now, if you really want to be a smart investor, number one, start putting money aside, stay liquid, prepare, because when the market shifts, the guys with the cash are the ones who get to capitalize on those opportunities. So I would definitely start setting money aside. I would reduce the amount of debt that I'm in. I would also start focusing specifically on assets that you want to keep. So if I'm buying a property right now, one of the questions that I'm thinking is, if I can't get rid of it in the next 6 months, then the question is, am I happy with keeping it for the next 5 to 7 years? And if the answer is yes, the income justifies it, then obviously we can add it to our rental portfolio. Really what I'm doing right now is, again, we're storing, we're making sure that we don't have too much debt, because that usually is what kills you in the market.
Yeah.
Make sure that we're implementing multiple strategies. And so again, it's all about diversification and being strategic about it. But that's what I would be telling investors. If you are, and this is my big warning sign, this is who really gets hit. If you're only a flipper, if you're only a wholesaler, listen, at this market, even an idiot can make money. I don't want to disrespect you and call you an idiot. I'm just saying.
It's the truth, right? Like, okay, let's be honest for a second. What's the barrier to entry to being a wholesaler? Like,
it's nothing.
Nothing. You don't even need a website. You need no website. You need no business card. You need really like no knowledge of anything. You can just, you know, knock on doors and say, hey, can you sell me your house?
Literally.
You need access
to a
printer.
And that's where you have to be careful. And you really have to be careful, because if you're wholesaling right now, which is great, good for you, you might be making 20, 30, 40 grand a deal, and that's good for you.
Yeah.
But the reality is, if that's your only approach, what happens when the market shifts and you have absolutely no buyers?
Totally. Yeah, we're in a very abnormal market state, right? Where wholesalers, this is like what boggles my mind, wholesalers are making more money than flippers right now.
Yes.
And they're actively... Like I met a couple of wholesalers. They're like, yeah, we want to sell to new investors, to new flippers, because they're going to pay more than the pro investors. And their justification for doing so is, well, it's a free market. Well, yeah, genius. But that is a major warning sign for somebody like me. Let's talk about rentals for a second. You mentioned buying single family rentals. What's the big deal then with this? Because if I'm buying rentals now, that means that I'm paying a little bit of a premium. If I'm, let's say I'm buying from a turnkey operator, there's so many good turnkey operators out there. But let's say that I'm buying from a turnkey operator and it's like beyond premium pricing for a single family rental. And if the market starts to kind of fluctuate and we start to see ourselves slowly going downward, that means that people won't have, let's say, jobs to support a $900 a month or a $1,200 a month or wherever you are in the country, dollar a month rent. And so then we have to kind of negotiate with them a little bit. Doesn't that have a negative impact on a rental portfolio? And if it does, what should I be doing about that? Should I just not be buying right now?
Well, that's a really, really good question. So I think this is a loaded question. So I want to give you guys some real clarity. So the first thing, we really can't compare what I'm doing on the rental strategy than most people. Primarily because I am currently buying assets still that are still at 45, 60 cents on the dollar, because my business doesn't depend on being a landlord. I do multiple strategies. So I get to lend, capitalize on those relationships, and really get a good deal. So if you can do that, because you're still getting some killer opportunities. Now, what I would say to anyone who's looking at holding these properties is it comes down to leverage. So if you are over leveraged, you have to get out of that deal right now before the market crashes, or you will not survive an actual discount on rent or vacancies. So that's the first thing. You cannot be over leveraged, which unfortunately most new investors are over leveraged. Now, here's, and I think I'll answer this and sum it up in this way. And so I just recently did an analysis. I like looking back and reflecting on what I've done right and the things that I've done wrong. And so I'm going to share with you a mistake that cost me about $1.5 million. For not thinking about the end in mind first, okay? And not only am I saying that, I lost about 20 grand a month in passive cash flow because of this mistake. So this is a huge mistake. Yes, I made money, but I should have been more wise about it. So now we're implementing strategies. So let me give you perspective. So in 2014 and 15, and actually up to 16, we had an operation, one of our strategies, we were buying about 10 to 15 homes a month. Overall, we were at over 300 plus properties, closer to 400. In total in that market, okay? Now, I was quick turning those homes very quickly, and we were making money. Here was the mistake. I currently only own a portfolio of 20 properties from all that effort. Now, had I actually been turning those properties and had the end in mind, and let's say I just allocated 30% of my profits to buying these properties free and clear.
Oh, man.
Okay? That means I calculated the numbers. The actual numbers
would have been. I don't want to hear this, Rick. I'm dying inside. What are you doing?
That's a perfect example, right? But it's a great way for everybody to open their mind and say, wow.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Before, I'm like, I have to keep the money turning. But what about the profit? If I would have kept literally a third of my profits, I could have owned 57 homes free and clear, not the 20. Okay. I could have made over $15,000 a month in net operating income. Okay. That's net operating income.
Yeah.
And I would have had a position of about $1.5 million in equity on a free and clear portfolio. And so again, what I'm telling people now is that's the way you need to think.
Yeah.
How can I make my turns, put the money aside and start taking down some of these deals long-term? Because in the end, if it's free and clear or very low loan to value, it doesn't matter if you have to lower the rents. You have passive income coming in every month. In fact, that adds strength to your portfolio.
Number one investing strategy right now, given the market condition, given what your overall gut feel is, hit it.
It's my secret weapon. Actually, again, it's all about diversity. I have my 40-40-20 plan. I really believe that the overall strategy of diversification is the key. Now, I have grown and evolved into becoming basically a private bank, private lender to other real estate investors. And because of that, a lot of family law offices and a lot of other hedge funds have approached me, and now they're purchasing paper from me. So this is kind of my arc, right? So the reality is when we scale, I can double and triple my volume in lending capital because I can package these papers and sell them off to other institutions so that I no longer have the capital exposure. The money's back in my wallet, but I'm still getting paid a percentage of the interest. So for me, this is the model that allows me to scale, remain liquid, and make cash flow so that when the market is corrected, I have the liquidity to go back into the market and actually start taking down deals. So for me, that is one of the most powerful strategies. And in fact, our fund number two that we launched brings investors so that they can participate in that model.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is a super, super powerful model, man. I mean, and there are not a whole lot of people that will understand that and actually go and execute it, right? There are a lot of folks that are watching now and that are listening, and they'll say, well, okay, you know, I want to start flipping and I want to buy and then renovate a little bit and then sell for up here. And there are a lot of investors that are also still thinking a little short-minded, right? They're not thinking for the long term. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about how can I get that quick hit, that quick gain of capital. But you have to remember, you really have to play the cash flow game here. It's no longer the, hey, let's flip and flip and flip and flip and flip to eternity, because quite frankly, you're creating a job and who wants that for yourself, right? I'm not interested. I mean, look at me, right? I'm 5'5", 120 pounds, right? Like, there's no way that I'm going to sit here and flip property for the rest of my life. And quite frankly, I hate doing it, right? Like, I would much rather invest in an operator and have them go do it all. Like, that's not me anymore. But from a single family rental, multifamily, buy and hold, long-term perspective, that's really the end goal. But then to put it on steroids and to do what you're doing, I think is something that's really special. It enhances your liquidity and it puts you in a position in the marketplace when by the time that it starts to cool off a little more, you're in prime position to buy everything, right? When America goes on sale, guess what happens, right? Everybody will shop on Black Friday because you know you're going to get the 50, 60, 70% off at Lulu, right? Or Banana Republic or J. Crew or, you know, your favorite bespoke tailor here, kind of like me. But when the market is in a very similar position, you want to be able to go all in and buy. And that's a big challenge. Rick, we have another minute or two before we have to wrap up here. I noticed that you have a book behind you. Is that a new book that you've written? Tell me about that book.
Yeah, actually, it's a challenge. I was challenged by one of my good friends specifically to share my story of how I started with absolutely nothing and built a pretty sizable business model. And it's called basically Investing with a Purpose, because really what I've learned here over the years is that it's not about making money. It's about utilizing money as a vehicle, creating passive income and leaving a legacy worth remembering. Mm-hmm. And so what I talk about this book is the strategies that I've implemented to go from being a one-dimensional, one strategy kind of guy to building a portfolio of various investments, creating multiple income streams, and ultimately how we infuse our purpose, which is to influence and feed nations. And we use the business to actually push the vision and make an impact around the world.
That's incredible. That's a story and that's a lesson that all investors and even just all business owners and entrepreneurs can really take away. It's not only being capitalistic in nature, right? It's good to make money. It's okay to make money, but you need to find that long-term impact, that long-term really what you want to do on this planet. Because if all you're doing is chasing the dollar, you're going to lose at the end of the day. You have to help others, and you have to figure out what really helps you in doing that. And so congratulations on all that success so far. And
thank you.
I'm excited to jump on some of your mission trips as well. And maybe the next time you go to Ukraine, I'll join you. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that.
That'll be fun. What's the best way that our viewers and listeners can get in touch with you? If they have any questions, whether it's about lending, whether it's about real estate investing, or quite frankly, just a good gut check on their local market.
Yeah, I would say go to hiscapitalgroup.com, click on contact us, and our team will get back to you and schedule an appointment so that we can help you. We can help you with micro analysis of what's going on in your market. We can give you a forecast from our economist, and we can share some of the tactics that we're using right now in more detail if you want.
Beautiful. Rick, thanks so much for joining me, man. I appreciate it. And I'll shoot you a text in a couple days and let's catch up. It'll be fun.
Sounds good, man. Thank you so much.
You got it. Think Realty Nation, that's how it happens here on the Think Realty podcast. I mean, these are good friends of mine. They're experts in the industry. They're coming on. We're talking about strategies that you can use right now to win. This next segment is brought to you by Narada Real Estate Investments, your premier source for cash flow investment property. Visit them at turnkeyrealestateinvestments.com. My good friend Marco Santarelli over there, a great guy and a great visionary for turnkey rental property. So you definitely want to check him out. Again, go to turnkeyrealestateinvestments.com. I'm excited for this segment specifically because I'm going to go on maybe just a minute and a half rant of what investors really need to be consider doing. And Rick said it best, right? If you're a flipper and you're only buying and flipping and buying and flipping and buying and flipping, what you're really doing here is you're putting putting assets on your balance sheet. And then when you sell the property, what happens? You take the asset off of your balance sheet. So you're not retaining any net worth. You're not retaining the asset. In a market that is as good as it is now, we have to be forward thinking. We have to be thinking about the future. And if you haven't had a chance to really understand Rick's 40-40-20 rule, I'll go into that now. 40% of your activity needs to be an active income, okay? Whether it's, in this case, a job, whether it's flipping activity, 40% active income, 40%, the next 40% needs to be in a passive income category. And that has to be single family rentals, multifamily, kind of pick your asset class here. The remaining 20% can be your higher risk, higher reward. Just keep in mind, because it's higher risk, the likelihood of it potentially also failing is a little higher. But your motivation for that and your experience in that specific realm, whether it's a startup or whatever it might be, will decrease your overall risk. But again, it's the last 20%. It's where you'll see some good gains. That's the 20% that's going to be your high risk, high reward. 40-40-20. Again, that's 40% active, 40% passive, and then 20%, the remaining 20% in your higher risk, higher reward type of scenarios. I'm a huge fan of this model because it really helps to round out your overall investing experience and your investing portfolio. If all you're doing right now is putting your money in ETFs and bonds and mutual funds and you're only in equities, boy, I mean, you're really missing out on buying and holding property. What that really gives you is what Robert Kiyosaki calls the five powers of real estate. And it's demonstrated in the word IDEAL, I-D-E-A-L, income, depreciation, equity, appreciation, and leverage. The five things. Again, income, depreciation, equity, appreciation, and leverage. So the five powers that no other asset class has in the world, real estate gives you. So consider real estate as an asset to add to your portfolio. Super, super important that you do that. So if you have any questions for Rick, certainly get in touch with him. You can go to hiscapitalgroup.com. And then, of course, say hello to my good friend Marco Santarelli, who's the sponsor of this segment, by visiting turnkeyrealestateinvestments.com. So this next segment, for me, I'm like your super senior millennial kind of guy. I feel like I'm the six-year returning to high school guy, right? Like I've been a part of high school now. I should have gone. I still haven't figured out if I'm a millennial or not. I'm like your super, super, super senior millennial. And from my research and from some of the recent articles, The home features that millennials like the most, you want to know what they are? I'm still trying to like figure all this out. I thought it was smart home technology because I'm like, I like the Nest features and then Alexa and Google Home. I have an Alexa at home. I thought it was smart home. Nope, it's not smart home. A kitchen, not a fabulous kitchen. Millennials don't want a fabulous kitchen. Well, it's not that they don't. I think that's just the standard, right? Home technology, the standard. What are they looking for the most? A big lawn. Like, I was looking at this. So Allie and Jared Turley of Hemet, California, are classic examples of millennials who value outdoor features over indoor ones. And they're willing to give up. And they're in their late 20s, and they bought a fixer-upper that had a pretty big-sized yard. Quote, you can always redo your kitchen, but you can't change the size of your yard. That's a good point. And she believes, Allie believes, that the millennial trend towards self-sufficiency also influenced their decision. You can have a garden in your lawn, super pet-friendly features as well. And quite frankly, I like that. And the more time that I spend in nature, the less stress that I have. And that's a research that was done by NALP points to research showing that just looking at plants and trees, even through a window, can reduce stress and lower blood pressure outside of the one glass of red wine a day. Look outside. It might just be beneficial for you. So if you're looking at, if that is your target market, if millennials are your target market, consider the larger size yard. But then also pay attention to what's going on locally in your marketplace. And for those homes that have smaller yards, and if that is the standard, then stick to that standard. But then know that that should be a focal point for millennials if that is your target market. Got questions for me? Get in touch. Go to thinkrealty.com. I love answering investing-related questions, and so do the guests that I have on the show and the experts and the influencers that we have on thinkrealty.com. Feel free to get in touch again. Thinkrealty.com is where I live. You can find me anywhere online as well at Abhi Golhar. The sponsor for today's podcast is brought to you by Renters Warehouse, one of the largest, fastest-growing, and highest-reviewed property management companies in America. Think Realty Nation, that's the show. You want to get in touch? Again, you know how to do it. I think I said it about 4 or 5 times, which is a huge call to action. Ask the questions, and we'll answer it right here on the Think Realty podcast. Until next time, happy investing.